Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. We know how hard it can be to keep on top of your spending. It's really difficult. There's so many things coming in, going out all the time. And there has been, for a long period of time, a whole category of technology that could help you do that. Budgeting apps, like there's probably 14 million of them on the App Store and Google Play. And maybe not 14 million, maybe 13 million, but a lot. There is a new one called Wilbur. It's recently out. It's developed in Canada for Canadians, and it's got a difference. It is different in that it pays you to do stuff. So we're going to talk about that. The CEO and co-founder of Wilbur is Mike Rodenberg, and he joins us now to talk about it. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. Nice to be here.
So I joke that there's 13 million apps on the App Store, maybe not 13 million, but certainly 50 for Canadians. And so I'm reticent to talk about any of them that aren't actually doing something that's new and different, because it feels like they're quite similar. The difference that caught my attention with Wilbur is that you pay people to do surveys. So let's start with the unique selling proposition of this app, and then we can talk about the other functionality that sounds similar to what other apps do. But start with the survey thing.
Yeah, so I've spent my entire career in the market research and public opinion polling business, and we actually set out trying to solve a problem with surveys, which is they're long and they're boring. And so what we decided that we could do is, if we collected the purchase data from a budget app, that we could use some of that information to make the surveys shorter and more interesting and more engaging.
I see. So I downloaded the app, and I know that it wants me to connect my bank accounts and other accounts to this. And so that would then inform the types of surveys that you would send to me. And because you've already got my basic purchase data, you wouldn't have to ask me if I use, you know, or I shop at this particular store, because you'd already know.
Absolutely. And that solves a big problem in the market research field, which is most surveys, people disqualify themselves in the first few questions, and then therefore they don't get the incentive and the reward.
So am I selling you my answers to a survey, or am I selling you my purchase data?
Yeah, so you're in part selling a bit of both. You know, so the customer of ours, they'll ask for the survey data, and then they'll ask us for little pieces of your purchase history that are relevant to the survey at hand. So if it's for a fast food joint, we're going to append your fast food purchases to the survey data, and that becomes the data piece that we sell.
Interesting. And how much do I get?
So we'll compensate the respondent for anywhere between $1 and $5 per survey, depending on how long the survey is and how hard it is to qualify for.
And how many might the average user complete in a month?
You know, what we know to be true about consumer research panels is that generally people will answer about 2.5 surveys per month. So it could amount for, you know, a 20 to 30 minute time commitment per month. And for that, we might pay them somewhere between, say, $2.50 and $5 per survey if it's on the longer side. So they could earn, you know, $10. Certainly would add to their beer money, so to speak, if that's
right.
It's not paying their mortgage. It's
not paying their mortgage, but they're getting a beverage.
Absolutely.
What would you say about the type of person that this is of interest for? And I ask because my 14-year-old's nuts about surveys. They're like, fill out all the surveys. Yeah. I think you'd probably have to pay me $100 to do a survey. I'm just so not interested. What is the type of person for whom this is interesting?
Yeah, so I think there's two broad cohorts of consumers that would be interested in this. One is people out looking for a budgeting app, because it is a fully featured budget app that allows you to categorize your spending. You know, your purchases are automatically categorized by certain categories that, you know, help you manage your budget and live your life a more frugal manner. And there are people out there that want to use a free budgeting app. My competitors charge, say, $10 per month. We'll give that away for free. And so that's one cohort of consumers. The other cohort of consumers are people who don't mind answering surveys. And those consumers who answer the surveys will obviously be encouraged to, you know, connect their bank accounts for a better survey experience, more relevant questions, fewer disqualifications, and ultimately earn more money.
We live in a world where everybody wants our data. There are some times when we are oblivious to its collection, like how the cookies work on our browsers, and we sort of feel like we're being eavesdropped on by our, I can't say the word, but rhymes with schnoogle, because if I say the actual word, it's going to start talking to me over there. And then there are worlds in which we are less cognizant or more cognizant of the data that's being collected. And I think you're being pretty overt about it here.
Yes.
How do you deal with a consumer reticence to provide access to that data? Because I stopped onboarding myself to the app as soon as you asked for my account passwords or whatever. It's like, you're not having my bank accounts.
Yeah, we know there's a certain type of consumer that will be concerned about the login process, but the login process is really designed to make the app efficient and easy to use. It would be very painstaking for you to enter every individual transaction to track that budget. Much more easy just to use the system that we built to make that metal happen automatically. Our guarantee to the users is that we don't sell their personally identifiable information. You're not going to get marketed to. Your email's not going to end up, full of spam because they're answering our surveys or using our app. We are just selling the anonymous data attached to the survey and whatever transactions that are relevant for that particular survey.
So, moving to the functionality of the app. So I got it. I get the business model. I understand the surveys and all that stuff. If we talk about the app itself, does it kind of work like Quicken or the Mint app used to work, or you need a budget? Like, is it sort of in that realm?
Absolutely. Yeah. So many of the same features. One of the interesting features that's different in our app compared to some of the others, and it's my co-founder and I are, we're strong believers in climate change and trying to find opportunities to give consumers better information to make better purchases about their impact on the environment. And so embedded in our app is a carbon footprint estimator that allows them to know with each purchase, what is the approximate carbon footprint associated with that purchase? And hopefully they'll, with that a little additional information, they can make better choices for the environment. So we have, some of those features built in, and then obviously you can create categories and you can tag transactions. And so if you have a boat, as an example, you want to be able to track the cost of your fuel and your maintenance and your mortgage, you can put all those together and track that as a separate budget item in your budget.
I have been covering these apps for a really long time. And one of my observations, and I think this is backed by the data, is from a behavioral science perspective, tracking has limited utility, especially when it's done automatically. So if you use the data, you look at it and you say, oh my God, I can't believe I'm spending that much on takeout. It really requires some sort of action to alter behavior. Otherwise, you've just got the data like they're tracking the data of the weather in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. It's like completely irrelevant to you if you don't do anything with it. So how do you make those connections such that the tracking has value?
That's a great question. We give the user the information to determine whether or not they're over or under budget on each specific consumer category that they participate in. It really is up to the consumer to make the decision on whether or not they want to modify their behavior going forward if they are actually, in fact, over budget. But, what we hope to be true is if we create multiple reasons to go back into the app and look at it, that they'll hopefully take some action. And so you can imagine that, the compelling reason to open a budget app might be to see how you're doing on a specific product category. But we now have this alternative option to participate in surveys. And once they're in the app, they'll be able to check to see where they are. So the more reminder points where they are on their spending, the better the opportunity they have to change their activity.
And I can see that because it's analogous to the Gamify world in which you're providing some sort of a dopamine hit to get someone even just to click on that app periodically. That makes sense to me. You said you illustrate to a user whether they are over budget or under budget. So tell me about that process by which, as a user, I set budgets for certain categories.
Yeah, so you go into the app, and then on the first screen, there's a series of line items that are automatically categorized for your spending, whether it be your entertainment budget or your living expenses. The user has the ability to set that particular budget based on their historical information. So what one of the interesting things about the app is the minute that you load your data from the bank into the app, it pulls in about, depending on the bank, anywhere from 4 months to 12 months of purchase history. And so you can very quickly see that, oh, maybe I spend $800 per month on my entertainment, and that's my historical average. And so now the user has the ability to make a decision and say, okay, every month I want to scale that back by, say, $50. And that becomes something that can become a goal. And they do that informed by their purchase history, which is really an important component of the app, because most consumers don't really have an understanding of where their money goes sometimes. And
100%.
The history is an important predictor of where they need to go in the future.
Yeah, they don't know. And even when presented with the data, they're like, that can't possibly be true. I never bought that much on DoorDash. Didn't happen.
Absolutely.
How do notifications work in your app? And I ask because I have most of them turned off on every app,
yes.
But in this particular category, they can be really helpful as prompts to say you are over budget on takeout food or your, you know, whatever. How do you employ them here?
Yeah, so we really have very few minimal prompts in the app itself. We don't, for that very reason that you say, we don't want to be bombarding the user with all sorts of notifications. But, you know, it is something that we want to add as a feature for future enhancement.
Really interesting stuff. Mike, thanks for joining us today to talk about Wilbur.
Thank you very much. It was a great time.
Mike Rodenberg is the co-founder and co-CEO of Wilbur, which is a new budgeting app that I am ambivalent about. But the interesting angle here is they will pay you to engage by doing surveys and stuff like that. How cool.